Hello everyone and welcome back to the AirPod for the first show of 2021. And although this year has gotten off to a slightly unusual start, we are here to bring you a slice of normality as the Royal News Agenda returns to, I guess, close to normal. Of course, I'm not just here by myself. I am joined by the lovely Maggie Rooley. How are you doing?
Hi, Omid. Good. I know you say it's the first episode of 2021. I think we were all so excited to get out of 2020, but I don't know. I mean, we're in lockdown here in London. A lot of 2020 seems to have carried over into 2021. But like you said, we have some royals, you know, news that'll help power us through in the new year as well. So there's some bright things to look up to.
Yeah, we haven't actually seen much of the royals or any of the royals since the start of the year. I think some engagements from before the holidays have sort of started to trickle out, the stuff that may have been embargoed over that period. And we'll talk about some of those a bit later on. But this is traditionally a quiet time for the royal family. Engagements rarely resume to normal in that first week of the new year. And of course, this has been, you know, slightly different to other years. We are now officially in our third nationwide lockdown here in England. And that, of course, will also change how the royals are working. Things that may have been scheduled to take place in person will have no doubt been delayed. And I'm sure we'll sort of see a return, unfortunately, to those that weren't fans of them at Zoom engagements.
How many more Zoom engagements can we survive, Omid? But I think you make a good point. I mean, this is kind of a quiet time always for the royals. It's a quiet time for everyone sort of after the holidays. I always feel like I go into hibernation anyway in January. This time it's a little bit more enforced. You know, you cannot leave your home. But maybe the royals are also embracing that. I like to think, Omid, I mean, what do you think they're doing right now under lockdown? Like, what are their lockdown 3.0 hobbies that they're picking up?
Well, I would imagine for the Cambridges, it's probably a relief for them that they don't have to come straight back to London. Usually the kids would be returning to school around now. Of course, with the schools officially closed here, it means that George and Charlotte won't be returning to their school in London. So from what I understand, the whole Cambridge family are still at their home at Anne Hall. We know that the Queen and Prince Philip are still nestle together at Windsor Castle. You know, it's a different time. In fact, funny you ask about where royals are at the moment. We saw something in the news a few weeks ago about how Princess Eugenie and Jack Brooksbank had moved into Frogmore Cottage, that Harry and Meghan had opened the doors to their home to the couple. And then mysteriously, there was a report saying that they had moved out. And no one really knew exactly where they were. And I saw information today that the couple have actually been spending their holidays with Sarah Ferguson, Fergie, and Prince Andrew at their Windsor Lodge home on the Windsor estate. And so I'd imagine that that's probably where they'll remain up until much later in the year.
Oh, interesting. So everyone's kind of just making it work right now. You know, I feel like everyone, people are finding wherever place they can to sort of hunker in and ride this out as safely as possible. And, you know, I think what's also interesting is you mentioned the Cambridges and their kids not going back to school. I also think, you know, all of a sudden they're becoming teachers at home, just like so many working parents around the country and around the world that have to sort of figure out how to do homeschooling with their kids. All of a sudden, they're right back at it as well. You know, you kind of forget that they have to also do things that the rest of the world has to do. So I imagine they're pretty busy, you know, making sure the kids are occupied and entertained and having their education while they're also doing royal work.
Yeah, I have a friend who's a fairly newcomer to the world of virtual teaching and sort of taking their kid through these classes. And I think they were particularly disappointed to find out that they would be returning for the beginning of the year. A lot of people are calling January the 13th month of 2020, and I can kind of see that.
Well, what about you, Omid? Have you discovered any new hobbies in this lockdown?
I have recently rediscovered my Pokemon card collection.
No, stop. Okay, first off, back up. You have a Pokemon card collection?
Well, so I'm currently at my, I was lucky enough to return to my family home just as London was about to go into tier 4 in December. which was the highest level of restrictions mm-hmm. that we'd had in the city so far. And I've actually remained here because, of course, we went straight from tier four into mm-hmm. lockdown. And I've decided that I may as well wait it out here. We've got the sort of expanse of the countryside and it's a lot more comfortable, I'd say, than being in the city. But one of the joys of being at home is also going through all of the stuff that you threw in the attic.
And you thought that you would so never think about at age again, 11. Yeah.
Including Pokemon cards. But here's why I mention it. Mm. Because if you look them up on eBay, each card has an insanely high value that I never thought would
really?
Be the case. So I'm actually currently pricing up Pokemon cards to sell.
Oh my God, this is brilliant. You have a little side hustle going on now.
This might be my new calling, Maggie.
Wow. And now everyone that's listening is going to go on eBay and check out for your Pokemon cards. This was a brilliant sell. I swear, exactly. I didn't know this. I'm not setting up Omid for a pitch here. It just happened, everyone, organically.
Hit me up in the DMs, yeah, anyone listening, if you're interested. We have some real rare collectibles there. Maggie, I understand you've graduated from 1,000-piece puzzles, and you're now...
So, here's my business idea. I've also been wanting to launch a business now under lockdown 3.0, and that's puzzle swapping, because we are getting such an insane collection of puzzles, and you can't like redo a puzzle right away. You have to wait like what, 5 years? I don't know, before you kind of think it's fun again. So all of a sudden we're just getting these stack of boxes. You know, we live in a flat in a city, so we don't have a ton of space for extra puzzle boxes. There's only so much puzzles you can store before it becomes ridiculous. So now I'm gonna donate them. But I was like, what if, you know, you have a big puzzle swap? I'm sure we're not the only ones with an exorbitant amount of extra puzzles now that everyone got into puzzling under lockdown, right? This could be something, Omid. Anyway,
we have in the village by us, we have a phone booth, an old red phone booth that they now use as like a book swap. Huh. So people put their books in there and you take one, leave one.
What a cute idea. So we could do a puzzle, take one, leave one. This is brilliant. But yeah, we have gone off the deep end. We're doing a 2,000-piece puzzle right now, which is exponentially harder than a 1,000-piece puzzle. But we're almost done. I think tonight we're going to finish it, Omid.
And you're staying safe. That's the most important. Yeah,
exactly. Puzzling is a very lockdown-friendly activity.
And, of course, safety is something that we've been thinking about when it comes to the royal family. Just last month, you and I had a conversation on the podcast about whether we would hear from Buckingham Palace when the Queen and the Duke mm-hmm. of Edinburgh have their COVID-19 vaccinations, or their first vaccinations. And at the time there was sort of a lukewarm response from the palace. They said that obviously it falls under the category of a medical issue and is not something that they usually address. And I've actually been back to the palace since to get that sort of confirmed, that they will not be releasing that information. And I think one could expect or presume that the Queen probably has had her vaccine or her first mm-hmm. vaccine by now, given that we are, I think, on about 1.5 million, vaccinations hits in the UK, and the Queen being one of the most at risk due to her age. There has been some reporting that suggested that Prince Philip didn't or might not want to have his vaccine. He turns 100 this year. But I wanted to bring this up because I question whether the royals are missing a trick here. You know, the Queen, I think, has done a really successful job of leading this country through or into our first lockdown, bringing that sort of unity and that sort of calm that she is so adept at providing in situations like this throughout the lockdown. I wonder if it might help, especially for the many, and we see the statistics, who are still a little on the fence about whether they want to have the vaccination when it is their turn. Yeah. Do we need to be seeing our monarch and figures such as Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh, having their vaccinations? Should that be sort of transcending the protocol around it being a medical issue?
I think you make a really good point. I mean, I understand the argument that at first they didn't want to be seen as jumping the line, right? You couldn't have the Queen getting it before other people who deserved it. But now that we're in their age bracket, they're not jumping the line. They're like the rest of the population that are vulnerable at that age. And it's their turn for a vaccine, I think it could be really powerful to have them come forward and say, I got this vaccine, here's what happened, you know, this is why the rest of the public should get the vaccine. Because like you say, you know, the doctors have been very adamant and scientists are very adamant that, you know, vaccine really will only work if the majority gets the vaccine. That's how we beat this virus. That's how we go back to some type of normalcy. And so people that are nervous about it or cautious or are scared, seeing the queen, someone who has been such a powerful leader through this time, I mean, and for decades, obviously, if she was vocal about getting the vaccine, I think it could really make a powerful statement.
Yeah, and of course, a precedent has already been set in Europe for members of the royal family sharing the information about their vaccination or when they had it. We had news on January the 1st that the 80-year-old Danish monarch, Queen Margaret, was the first European royal to share the news that she had received the COVID-19 vaccine. And what's interesting about this is, of course, Denmark, I believe, or according to reports, has been one of the most efficient countries in Europe in distributing their vaccine. I think 1 week after the rollout began, the country was claiming that they had the highest vaccination rate per capita in Europe. And I wonder if perhaps sort of the addition of having their queen share something like this would also sort of put that faith into something that so many people need to be ready to take on as soon as it's available. I think also in Bahrain, the king there has also announced or shared the news that he's had both doses of the Pfizer vaccine. So there is precedent there. It'll be really interesting to see as this sort of trickles down to other groups. Will we hear from Prince Charles, the Duchess of Cornwall, when they have their vaccinations? Will we possibly have the cameras with, say, the Cambridges much later in the year when younger people have access to the vaccine? It'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And, you know, when we first started talking about vaccines, we did some pieces at ABC just about public perception of them. And I went out and spoke with some people, just, you know, approaching them in the street and asking their opinion on the vaccine. What do they think? Would they take it? And I was blown away by how many young people we interviewed said that they were cautious about the vaccine and didn't feel comfortable taking it. So I think that, you know, this isn't something that's going to go away. I think even, as you say, as it trickles down, having the Cambridges step forward will also be a really powerful statement.
Well, we did have some news from Buckingham Palace this week related to the pandemic, but far from news on a vaccine, that the official garden parties, of course, the site that we always see take place in the Royal Property in Edinburgh, but also at Buckingham Palace, have already been cancelled for 2021. This announcement came much later in the year last year, if you'll remember. The garden party events were cancelled at the very last minute, but I understand from a palace spokesperson who shared the news with the media that they've taken this step early because, of course, there are so many people that they have to hire and so many people involved in the preparation process for these events. I think there's something like over 30,000 guests in total that get to spend sort of a summer afternoon in the gardens of Buckingham Palace or the Palace of Holyrood House alongside the Queen. And so a lot of work goes into this, and these have officially been put I guess out of their misery, sadly, for this
when
year.
I heard this, I just, it was a little bit of a deflating piece of news, wasn't it, Omid? I mean, I think we all have so much hope for the future, and there's rightfully a lot of reasons to be hopeful. So many vaccines are getting rolled out. You know, we know more about the virus now than we ever have before, and as long as things go according to plan, there really is sort of this light at the end of the tunnel. But then to hear that for all of this year, all of 2021, no garden parties, it was very deflating. I was like, oh, man. It's not gonna be better by the summer. It was a tough pill to swallow.
And if, you know, these events, I think a lot of people question what's the need for a garden party. Yeah. There is a real purpose behind these, and that purpose being that it's a chance for the Queen to speak with a broad range of people from all walks of life, all people who have made a positive impact in their community and in British society. And she's often joined by the members of the royal family, and there's sort of protocol there. They will work the entire space speaking with everyone before they go in. But this year, I think there was hope that the garden parties could take place because the focus, of course, was going to be on those that had led many through the pandemic in the past year and continue to do so, including frontline workers and people from all walks of life have been touched by it. So I think that'll be a real moment of sadness for the Queen, who would have really hoped that she could have shown her gratitude in I guess the way best way that she knows how.
Although maybe she'll think of something new. I mean, I just think that it's amazing the Queen has embraced Zoom calls like she has. And even though we kind of, you know, knocked Zoom calls earlier in the show, I think we're all a little tired of having to do everything over video conference calls. It is just incredible that a woman like the Queen, who, you know, is older and has seen a lot of technological changes in her lifetime, has embraced it so fully. So I am hopeful that maybe she'll think of a creative way to sort of keep the momentum and the appreciation, those ways to show her appreciation going forward that maybe we don't even know yet. Maybe, you know, it's going to blow our minds, something wild that'll happen. And, you know, it'll be even bigger and better than we dream of it.
I would love to see a sort of virtual fundraiser concert or something.
Ooh,
people can buy a ticket. There'll be an address from the Queen, something, raising money for the NHS or something.
What about
like
the Queen on Cameo? How much would you pay for the Queen to send you a special message?
I would give
that would raise
all
a lot of money. Can you imagine? Actually, that would raise so much money.
I would love to see if we'll ever see a member of the royal family on Cameo. Whether
that could be possible. Pitching it now. We are just full of business ideas this podcast, Omid. I hope someone's writing this down.
This will be a launch for a separate show later this year. Well, we did see Prince William show up over the Christmas break through a number of photos released by the Passage Charity, which is a homeless charity and shelter here in the UK, that revealed that the Duke of Cambridge made three surprise visits to a homeless shelter before the Christmas holidays. And these photos showed William speaking with homeless residents, packing food at the shelter, working alongside volunteers, serving up hot meals for people. Of course, so many had moved into emergency accommodation, either by issues regarding the pandemic. Of course, there's been a lot of job loss in the past year. But of course, winter and the Christmas time itself is particularly busy time for homeless charities that see a lot of people sleeping rough throughout the holidays. And as we know, this is something that's really important to William.
And Omid, what's so great here is that not only is this obviously, you know, William championing something that is very important, not only this time of year, but, you know, all year long, it's something that's important to him, but he's also really championing something that was so important to his mother. And we know Diana brought both William and Harry to the Passage when they were teenagers, and it really affected them. And it was something that, you know, they took on as a cause as well. So, you know, by continuing his work with the Passage and with homelessness in London, you know, he's doing something that's important to him, but also was important to his mom, and continuing to fulfill her legacy as well. And we see this so much with both William and Harry. Clearly, you know, this is something that is important for them, this mission of continuing their mother's legacy. So to see him doing it and doing it in a way that is just so heartfelt and passionate and meaningful is really powerful.
And this is a time when charities such as The Passage are really experiencing a drought when it comes to donations, but also volunteers. I think a lot of people are afraid to sort of be doing volunteer work at a time when we are slightly more susceptible putting ourselves out there. And so I think to see Prince William safely in an environment with a mask and gloves and all the rest of it, sort of getting stuck in there, will hopefully encourage others to want to give some time or donate in some way. Prince William's focus on homelessness isn't just with The Passage. He's also the patron of the Centrepoint organisation, which provides housing and support for young people in London and across the UK. Their aim is to give homeless young people a future and put an end to youth homelessness. On a recent episode of The AirPod, I caught up with Paul Noblet from the organisation, who told us just why Prince William is so passionate about the cause.
You know, the Duke has been so committed to helping young homeless people in the UK getting their lives back on track. He's, of course, paid a number of visits to your various locations here in the UK. And then earlier this week, he opened the Apprenticeship House in London, which is a space that aims to support young people in their journey to independent living. How impactful is it to have someone like Prince William championing your cause, but also really sort of being on the ground helping out?
it's absolutely fantastic. I mean, you can't really measure the value, not only in terms of the increased profile he brings, of course, to Centrepoint, but also for the issue of youth homelessness, which in the UK affects around about 100,000 young people every year. So it's absolutely invaluable to have his support and his help in raising the profile of those issues. But I think it's also something that's really, really important to the young people he meets. So yesterday, I think the feeling was that he, of course, wanted to help us mark our birthday with the gala with all of our supporters last night. But it was also incredibly important to him that morning, as you say, he came and opened a new project of ours, which is designed to support young people into employment and training, because ultimately that's the way they can escape youth homelessness in the long term. But I know that something that the Duke is absolutely passionate about is making sure those young people are listened to. And he spent almost half an hour with those young people. And I think to give up 30 minutes of his time to come and actually really get into those issues and really listen to and understand where those young people are coming from was absolutely fantastic and meant a huge amount to those young people he met yesterday morning.
Absolutely. Centrepoint was the first charity that William inherited from his mother, and I'd say probably because of that, it's always been one that he's held especially close to his heart. Take me back to Diana's involvement with Centrepoint. Can you tell us about the legacy there?
So, late Princess Diana was a patron of Centrepoint from 1992 until her obviously very tragic and early death in 1997. And one of the interesting things at the gala last night was we saw old footage of her speaking about the issues at a visit to Centrepoint all those years ago. And I think that really has instilled in the Duke of Cambridge, who was himself only in his sort of early to mid-teens when he was first brought by his mother to come and find out about some of the issues affecting young homeless people. That's clearly left a great mark. And I think whilst we get to see lots of the glamorous sides, and of course, listeners will know all about the glitz and the glamour of some of the events like our gala, what they perhaps won't see are not only some of the lower key visits like the one he did yesterday, but also some of the, of course, private visits which the Duke does. And he does that very much for the benefit of the young people we support, and so he can find out more, because the young people, of course, whilst some will be happy to talk to the media and be filmed and photographed, they actually will open up a lot more and really talk in a much more intimate setting with the Duke if the cameras are away. So I know that's something that's really important to him, is not just to do the high profile events, but really to dig down. And I think that very much is a legacy of his late mother, who, again, her speaking out on issues like youth homelessness was really critical in raising the profile of those issues back in the 1990s.
Well, coming up after the break, we will be catching up with the Sussexes stateside. Today, Maggie, it is 1 year since Harry and Meghan announced that they were stepping back from the royal family. So much has happened since then. So many reports today about what they'll be doing next and how the royal family are reacting. Welcome back. Well, it's funny to think that just 12 months ago, to this day, as we record this, Harry and Meghan announced or made the historic announcement they were stepping back as senior working members of the royal family. So much has happened in that time since. But one thing that still looms over this story and is still the subject of great discussion is the 12-month review that was offered by the royal family to the couple, that when they officially broke away from their roles on March the 31st last year, they would reconvene exactly 1 year later to discuss how everything has been and potentially for the door to be open to them to return should they want. Now, reports out in the UK this week and in the last week suggest that the couple have been eager to extend that 12-month review period. But guess what, Maggie? I've checked it with sources and none of this is true. They say that the couple are extremely happy with their current circumstances and in fact have dealt with all of the issues that were left after that sort of breakaway in March. Remember, we were talking at the time about security. We were talking about how they would sort of commercialize the work that they were doing. A lot of those negotiations weren't entirely wrapped up on March the 31st. But those close to the Sussexes say that all of this has been dealt with now. And we actually have a couple who are very happy where they are. And it begs the question whether this review is even needed anymore.
Oh, interesting. Well, you know, Omid, I'm curious, with the review, it was two-sided, right? So not only was sort of Harry and Meghan, I just merged their name, Mary, never done that before. Harry and Meghan need to sign off and say, you know, we're happy with the way things are, we don't want to re-review it. But the palace had to as well, correct? So could the palace, by any chance, come to them and say, no, we want to, you know, a different relationship with you after these 12 months. We want X, Y, and Z. We want more control. Is that also a possibility?
I mean, I think as we've seen, anything is possible in this situation. Yeah. But I remember at the time speaking with people who had not only been involved with the discussions and the negotiations, but also those on the institution side of things as well, who said that this really was the Queen wanting to leave the door open to the couple so they can find their feet and sort of come back 12 months later. And if things need to change or if there's anything that they'll want to discuss, it can be. Now, we have to remember there were some issues of contention as they stepped away. Of course, Harry was very publicly stripped of some of his military honours, and there had been talk that he may want to come back in this review period and discuss taking those on again. But I think, as we've seen, this is not a situation in which bargaining can really happen. And from the conversations that I've had with people close to the Sussexes, I think that they have really made peace with the way everything is at the moment. And it seems to me, and this might come as a surprise to you, that I think that there is a sort of press narrative or a tabloid narrative that people are keen to keep going, that the couple somehow may want to get something from their old roles back, or that the royal family may punish them further. There's been a lot of talk about titles being taken away. But from what I understand, none of this is actually the case. This is a couple that really did exactly what they said they'd do. They've had their less than 12 months to achieve so much. And we're now at a point where I think that if anything happens during these talks, it will simply be a chance to reflect on the past year, because as we know, that move didn't leave things particularly great with certain family relations.
Yeah, I mean, you make a good point. You're thinking about all that has happened in the past year. Forget about even just the state of the world in the past year, but for Harry and Meghan as well. I mean, the list of new business ventures that they've launched and accomplishments that they've had. And this was, again, all during a pandemic as well. You know, I think we would have probably seen a lot more of them. We would have also seen a lot more of them working in the UK as well as the US. So this was not a normal year to be dealing with a major departure either. So the fact that they were still able to accomplish so much and make such a mark sort of on the world as this new couple living in California, it's actually pretty incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I think to think of how much has been achieved in that sort of 9 months from March to where we are now, you know, we've got the Spotify multi-year deal, we've got the production deal with Netflix, we have the Archwell Foundation, of course, details of that came out just before we recorded our last episode. And, you know, the couple really are in their stride now, despite the limitations of the pandemic. And really the only link to the royal family that they have at the moment is the work that they do with the Queen's Commonwealth Trust. They do continue with their roles as president and vice president of the QCT, which, of course, the Queen is the head of. And that's something that the Queen, I believe, is very happy with the work that they've done there. And then they also have their royal patronages as well. Which, again, that was something that the Queen had allowed the couple to keep as they went off into their independent lives. And the palace still say that, you know, if anything changes with those relationships, it's simply between the Sussexes and the trustees of the charities or organisations themselves. So I really don't think we're going to see much change come March 31st or around that review period. There were stories suggesting that Harry was actually going to fly over for that, but I would imagine, given the circumstances, that's not going to happen.
I mean, yeah, hopefully by March. I am excited for this future where they spend more time in the UK. I mean, that was the original plan, right? They really were going to have more of a, you know, life in both countries and still work on charities in both countries and go back and forth and make sure, you know, Archie got to know both sides of the family. And I think that would be amazing. And, you know, this past year, unfortunately, was just, I mean, impossible to be flying like that from LA to the UK. So I do hope going forward and, you know, fingers crossed, Omen, it can happen this year. Maybe that's still wishful thinking, but if not this year, soon, we can see more of them here in the UK working on things that are important to them in both countries. Mm.
Well, as we highlighted in the last episode, there are still plans in July for the commemorative statue for Princess Diana to be unveiled at Kensington Palace by both Harry and William. And of course, although there's no news on the Invictus Games, that is coming up later this year before the summer.
Right.
It's probably hanging by a thread, I would imagine, at the moment. Mm. But I would also imagine that they're really trying to work out how they could still make it work in some capacity. As with a lot of sporting events this year, that's going to be a real challenge for anyone involved in that arena.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate. I think when it was, you know, postponed last year, no one thought they'd be talking about canceling or postponing it again, right? 2 years in a row of missing it would not only, I think, really hurt the charity, but also how much it means for so many of those athletes that train for this moment and just the awareness that it brings. So I'm sure a lot of people are hoping that that can go on.
There is one other thing I wanted to touch on before we say goodbye. Camilla, the Duchess of Cornwall, has launched her very own reading club.
Yes, I love this.
I'm
all in.
It's called The Reading Room. It's simple. I was kind of hoping for like for a name, like Oprah's Book Club or something like that. But The Reading Room is catchy. And the aim of this is to help people discover new books and also create a place where they can watch interviews with the authors of those books. It launches on January the 15th. They've only got an Instagram account at the moment, but we know that Camilla has really championed reading throughout the lockdowns, and she wanted, I understand, to create an online haven for literature lovers. So this reading room will encourage book fans of all different ages to discover new writers and connect with literary communities around the world, which I think is a great idea. It'll be interesting to see what impact that has on the sales of each book that's selected. We know, certainly in the US, book clubs always help book sales massively so.
Well, and we were kind of joking about earlier this week when I told you I became obsessed with puzzles. You said, you know, Maggie, whatever stops you from just binging TV shows for the next 3 months, and it's kind of true. You know, I think that when you can't leave your home, often the default are TV shows and movies, which I'm not knocking them. I still watch a lot of TV shows and movies. They're fantastic. But, you know, exercising your mind in a new way is great as well. So the timing of this, I think, is really important. The next few months, and people are stuck inside, remembering there are amazing books out there, and this is a chance to catch up on all the reading that you normally can't do. I know I've been reading a ton. Omen, I'm curious, do you have a book recommendation for everyone?
Oh,
have you been reading?
Good question. You know,
I am
halfway through a book by a journalist called James Nestor at the moment called Breathe, The New Science of a Lost Art. Now, what's interesting about this book is that it really goes into, of course, we all breathe. We, you know, that's a given. But the book talks about how as humans, we've lost the ability to breathe correctly. And there are serious consequences for that. So the book seen the author travel to different parts of the world to discover the hidden sciences behind ancient breathing practices, not some of the ones that we know, but also some of the more progressive ones too. And it talks about the modern research that shows us how it can rejuvenate our internal organs, that it can help with allergies and autoimmune diseases, and even help with back problems. So it's really interesting. It sounds a little left of field, but it's highly recommended. Do check it out.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's a great one. I have to say, I was on a less intellectual kick. I went through like a thriller phase the last month where all I wanted were like really juicy, like whodunit thrillers. And I read like 7 in a row. I was ridiculous. But now I'm reading a book I will recommend. It's also by a journalist. And do you remember the book Born to Run that was really popular? So I loved that book. He wrote another book called Running with Sherman. And I'll just tease it by saying Sherman's a donkey that he rescues. And it's about teaching this donkey to run. And as an animal lover, Omid, you will love this book. I mean, it's similar to your book, how it goes back to this basic art of breathing, what it can do for the body. He also talks a lot about this basic act of human-animal interaction and how, you know, we've lost our reliance on animals and our relationship with them, but how it's really, we've co-evolved with animals. And so when you take them away, it's detrimental to society. And so, you know, he there's a lot of, you know, science and philosophical moments, but that's also just really funny because it's like him teaching this donkey to run a marathon with him. It's so good. And it like makes me want to go run a marathon and get a goat and a dog.
It sounds ripe for a documentary movie as well.
Yes. Clearly I was reading it and I was like, I need to reach out to him for an interview.
I'm sure you'll figure out a way.
I want to go meet Sherman.
Well, I think on that note, I must go and find my own animal.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you again, guys, for tuning in. And thank you for all the New Year's wishes. We also wish you a happy 21. As difficult and challenging as this year may be, we are here to provide a little lightness and distract you from other things at least
We're
once a week,
together.
Every Friday. So do subscribe if you're not. We've got a lot planned this year. A lot of huge royal moments as well. And a lot of... dare I overuse this word already? My first unprecedented, Maggie, a lot of unprecedented royal moments on the cards as the royal family navigates what has been a sort of unexpectedly extended corona coaster, if you can call it that.
That's the first time I've heard that one. That's pretty good. Well, we have a big year, Omid.
It's a big one. Stick around, guys. We will be here with you every week. Take care.
Bye.